From the front lines.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KTYR and its stakeholders. We are the Forum for the Fans. The Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we're on the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show, the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud. We were going to focus this episode on the great Henry Lundqvist on this episode and discuss internal happenings with the team, or more so with Rangerstown, Blue Shirts Twitter, as far as captainship, because that has been a huge topic on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. But I think the direction we're going to have to go with is, and as I thought, when we received the news of sometime about under a week ago, the passing of Roger Bear, probably the greatest Ranger to ever put on the blue shirt, the first number retired at the Garden, a little bit before my time. However, to go back and study his tape like I would study any other player for the teams that I root for, he was the best. He was the best as far as what he made up as a blue shirt, how he represented the city, scoring-wise, guy from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, what he meant to his teammates, the line that he played on. Let's talk about this. Let's get familiar with it. Let's talk with Blue Shirts fans and get thoughts on that, because he passed away, about a week ago maybe or so, and yeah, I think we let's discuss this, man, and have some fun. And then also let's get to Henry Lundqvist as far as his official retirement, and then the captainship, if we could get to it. And I said to myself, let's try to look at other teams. If we had time left in the remaining episode, just random, like I was going to go this week with Chicago, go with the Blackhawks, or whether RP wanted to pick a team, not name the Rangers towards the end of the episode, or if Glenn or Scott, or if anybody wanted to come on and, you know, discuss the Islanders or discuss the Bruins or whatever, let's do that. You know, as we get closer to the start of the regular season, it's almost the end of August. I can't believe it. But Glenn, what's going on? Glenn NYR, man, what's going on, man? Let's talk about this, man. Roger Bear, how did you find out about the news, dude? And it's good to hear you back here on the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud. And let's talk about it, because you saw him play the entire time. What's your thoughts?
I certainly did see him play. Those early 70s Emil Francis teams were the first team, the first Ranger team that I rooted for. And obviously that made the Boston Bruins the first rival that I rooted against of us. But, you know, I mean, Rod was a great player. You look at his stats, as you said, he's probably the best player. I mean, you maybe make a case for Leach, but the two of those are pretty close as far as the best player that ever put on a Ranger jersey, I think. Obviously having that distinction of having his jersey be the first one retired says a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I met him a few times, too. I used to coach ice hockey in Harlem for about 15 years up in Alaska Rink in Central Park. And the Rangers were tied to that, supported it, and sponsored it. And, you know, every year there were a couple of events that they had to raise money for the program. They had an auction in February, and they had a golf outing in August. And I was lucky enough to meet Rod Gilbert and chat with him a number of times at some of those events. And boy, I tell you, what a great guy, what a Ranger promoter. I mean, when they say he was an ambassador for the team, I mean, he's mm-hmm. the epitome of being an ambassador. And he always had time for everyone. He never turned his back on anyone, whether it was adults or kids. It seemed like he wanted to meet every Ranger fan in the world. You know, that's what I'll remember about him even more than his play. What a gentleman he was, what a classy guy he was, and, you know, beyond that, what a great player. So I was sad to hear that he had passed away. It sounded like it was maybe a short illness, I didn't really hear what it was, but I had not heard that he was ill in any way. So it was really a shock and really a sad day to hear that. So that's my take on Rod. Great guy.
Let's dive deep a little bit into it more, right? So would you say his style off the ice was kind of somewhere in between, not as flamboyant as a Broadway Joe, because that was around the same time, Broadway Joe, late 60s,
yep,
early 70s with the Jets, right? But maybe somewhere between him and, let's say, a Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter has been always a professional, you know, with the Yankees, a professional athlete, embraced New York City, but he was never necessarily always in the limelight, in your face, like a Broadway Joe, where Jabert was kind of like that. You know, he was somewhere in the middle, I'm saying. Like, he loved the city. He loved, like you said, meeting all the Rangers fans, but he knew when to turn it off. He was never in the press for the wrong things. It was always out, with fans. Even, to an extent, maybe a party here and there, but never to the point it affected his profession, his game, Is that fair to say somewhere in between Broadway Joe and Jeter as far as style and embracing New York City?
Well, and Steve, don't forget, in the late 60s, as I remember it, it was Roger Bear, Joe Namath, and Clyde mm-hmm. Frazier. They were kind of icons in New York at that time. Maybe Tom Seaver was the best, winning the World Series in 69 and all too. But, I mean, those were the three guys that everybody kind of looked at and said, wow, I want to be him, great player. Rod used to like to party a little bit, but it never got, it was never in the newspapers. It was never anything, that got him in any kind of trouble. But, much like Joe and, Clyde wasn't that way, but much like Joe Namath, there were always reports of him, being out on the town and having a good time and everything. And, he was such a good looking guy. He was kind of a playboy around the city, just like Namath was, and to a degree Clyde. And I remember those late 60s of it being those three guys were the ones that everybody wanted to be, And but like you say, I mean, that was a different time too, not now where, everything's in the paper. And Jeter, I think Jeter was a little more quiet. You never really heard a lot about him.
Yeah.
Being out on the town and everything. So I don't know if I'd put him in with that trio. I mean, he was always about business. He was always about baseball. You knew that Clyde and Joe Namath and Gilbert had a life off the playing field, and that just made them, just more of an icon to all the New York fans at that time. And that's kind of what I remember about him.
How can I forget about Clyde? You're right. I know. You're right. I would love to see a documentary or a biography focusing on those three in particular at that time. I haven't seen that yet. There's always been all of them, individually over the years. But good point.
Well, do you remember?
But when I said about Jeter, it was more about the business part. Professionalism. Yeah, he's definitely not like in your face always at the parties and stuff, not like that. He was kind of low-key.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with that. You were saying
right.
that?
Yeah, I'm sorry. There was a show that I think was on either SNY or MSG that chronicled the year around 1969. And obviously the Rangers didn't do anything, but it was pretty much about the Mets winning the World Series, the Knicks winning their championship, and the Jets winning their championship. And there was a lot of focus on Namath and on Clyde Frazier. In fact, both of them were, kind of in between making comments and stuff. So I don't know if you saw that, Steve, but you should try to find it. I loved it, man. It was
okay.
So interesting. I loved it. And for all the fans out there, too, if they remember. Yeah, it was a great documentary.
Let's go back to his playing days, because everybody, if you were a Rangers fan, you know how he came up as far as he had the bad back. I think he had a fall or something in his juniors before he was to call up. And Right. And they thought he wasn't going to play. You know, I remembered those stories over the years. You know, now you can go back and research it. And the fact that, you know, he was never really a big, big guy, but he was tough. He was tough, and he could shoot, good slap shot. But the rapport, now I'm getting ahead of myself, but as far as him coming up, because I think before he really broke out and they thought he was going to be the big, you know, the franchise player, per se, I think the Rangers lost to the Canadiens, I think it was. It was 69, I think. If you correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But they lost to the
Canadiens
in the playoffs. But it didn't. I think it was in a couple of years after that where he had that real big game, a real big breakout game where he had the 4 goals in Montreal. And I think the newspapers went crazy about him. See, back, as you already know, Glenn, it was a newspaper town, New York City, in those times. I mean, it was no social media. It was all about headlines.
Oh, I know. I mean, Steve, a couple of things I can tell you about him and about that. One of the first games I remember was, and a lot of Ranger fans will have heard about this. Last game of the season against Detroit, I believe it was 1970. It was an afternoon game at the Garden. At that time, there was no cable really or anything, so the Rangers were broadcast on Channel 9. For their away games, but their home games were not broadcast on TV. So you only had Marv and Bill Chadwick to describe the action for you at the time. And this was a national game, so it was on TV. And the Rangers at that point were fighting with Montreal for the last playoff spot. The Rangers had to play Detroit in the afternoon, and Montreal was in Chicago that night. The Rangers had to win the game, and at that time, the tiebreaker for making the playoffs was goals scored. So the Rangers had to win. The Montreal had to lose to Chicago, so they were tied in points, and the Rangers had to score 5 more goals than Montreal scored that night in Chicago in order to break the tie. And That's a very famous game, first of all, because Rod Gilbert set the record for 16 shots on goal by an individual Ranger in a game. Rangers were winning that game 9-3 in the second period, I believe, or early in the third. And Emil Francis pulled the goalie. I don't know if it was Villebois or Jacobin to try to just keep pouring on the goals, right? So Detroit got 2. The final score was 9-5. And then I remember doing this. A lot of Ranger fans probably did this, trying to find the Chicago-Montreal game on the radio late at night, you know, hoping that the signal would come through. And I know I don't remember that I did. Other people may have. But anyway, Chicago beat Montreal 10-2 that night. And so the Rangers scored enough goals and made the playoffs in 1970 and knocked Montreal out last day of the season. So that's a Rod Gilbert story because he set the Ranger record for most shots on goal by a player in a game. So you know how much he wanted to win. And then maybe we can get into this a little later. I don't know if you saw last night, Steve. There were MSG had I saw 4 hours of it you know, the show The Vault, where they show old games and things like that with Al Troutwig. In some cases, they had coaches' film of the game, and they overlapped Marv Albert's call because they didn't have a game. So, I mean, it looked like it was perfect, and we can get into that a little bit later. But Rod was also on that, making some comments and everything in between the games. They had Nicky Fatiu and Dave Maloney and a bunch of others. But you know, you started talking about that line, and Gilbert talked about the gag line and how, you know, they had been together for 10 years. You know, you had Rod, who was the flashy, you know, fast-skating, slap-shooting goal scorer on that line. You obviously had Jean Rattel, who was one of the best playmakers ever, but could also score as well. And, you know, obviously they had Vic Hatfield then, who was the guy to go in the corners, despite the fact that he scored the 51 year. He'd go in the corners, dig the puck out, and get it out to the two of them. And so that line was just constructed so well. And besides the fact that the gag line, obviously goal-a-game line, played together for 10 years, Rattel and Gilbert played together since they were kids.
Right,
in fact,
right.
Gilbert
they
mentioned
were way
last back. Night. Yeah, I mean, they played, you know, for 10, 12 years before they even got to the Rangers. And in
correct.
Fact, Gilbert yeah. said that he had told someone on the Rangers when he was young, you gotta bring in my buddy Jean Rattel. We've been playing so long. He's a great player too. And that was part of the reason why the Rangers signed him. And then they came up together. And, you know, I mean, that line was one of the great lines in the NHL and obviously one of the great lines in Ranger history because, you know, these days lines don't stay together for more than two periods. So they don't have fancy nicknames or anything like they used to. But, no, I mean, they were the top line and that was just a perfect blend. We talk about, you know, what we want the lines to be with the current Rangers and everything. That line was just perfect. They had everything you would want in a line, and that's why they were so successful, and they were a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, that I didn't know. I remember that going back and studying on that. They were childhood friends. I think Gilbert, I think he saw Rattel play, and I think they just fed off each other ever since. They always
yeah.
competed in the juniors, mm-hmm. and then I think the Rangers, the scout brought him in because they wanted Gilbert to be comfortable. You know, whatever you need, man, we got you. We'll take care of you. And if you played with somebody for so long at that young age, you know their tendencies, you know where they're going to be. So, like you said, you know, the goalie game line, you bring Hatfield with it, then you have Brad Park, you have the goaltenders. I mean, but this is where I don't know because I didn't see every game. This may
okay.
be where you can help me on this.
I'll try.
Did they break up the band too soon? Because, like, I know they had the struggles versus the Bruins, and I know they had the issues, like, coming back in the series versus Bobby Orr. I know all that. But at what point, like, they traded Rattel, I think, to the Bruins, if I'm not mistaken, right? They traded,
yeah.
like, I know
yeah.
Rangers fans could not have liked that, especially with all the brawling
well,
and all that stuff at that time. Like, what the hell
yeah.
happened?
I'll lay it out all out for you, Steve. In 1974, they lost a tough seven-game series to the Flyers, the famous Dale Ralph game where, you know, Dale Ralph got beat up by Dave Schultz and, you know, none of the Rangers stepped in to try to protect him and everything. And there was a lot of controversy and a lot of angst about that they weren't sticking up for each other. And then in 1975, you had the J.P. Parise game with the Islanders knocking the Rangers out in the first round, and the Rangers had, I don't know, finished 30, 40 points ahead of them. And, you know, so then they got knocked out in such stunning fashion in April of 75. And to me, I thought they could have maybe mm-hmm. got another year out of that team. I mean, that team had been together for quite a while. They would, you know, the bottom lines, they'd kind of shift guys in and out and everything. I mean, in fact, Glenn Sather was on the 72 team as one of the bottom six. You know, the Teddy Irvins and guys like that. The first guy to go actually was Hatfield. There was and Rod mentioned this in the show I saw last night. Rangers down, game seven. They take a too many men on the ice penalty with 2 minutes left. Hatfield winds up serving the penalty in the penalty box. Apparently, a TV camera caught him laughing. And I believe the story was, you know, the timekeeper in the penalty box had said something funny, so he laughed and everything. And that was taken as these guys are getting knocked out, and he's laughing. You know, I mean, do they care? What's the problem here? So, Hatria was the first one shipped out after the 74 season, went to Pittsburgh for Nick Beverly, kind of a journeyman defenseman. And then after they got knocked out in 75 by the Islanders, you know, I guess there was a lot of pressure on Emil Francis to do something. And he made the decision that it was time to break up the team. So Halloween, you got Eddie Jockeman going on waivers, going to Detroit, and two nights later having the heroes welcome the Eddie game at the Garden, where the fans were rooting against the Rangers. And Steve Vickers scored a goal on Eddie and apologized to him. Detroit won that game 6-4. And, you know, that was the night during the national anthem when, you know, you've seen Eddie crying because the fans were chanting his name and everything. So Eddie was gone. A week later, he had Brad Park and Rattell going to the Bruins for Carol Vadney and Espo. So that, you know, that happened in a week. That happened in a week. And it was in November. It was, you know, first week of November. I think they had gotten off to a slow start, and they just decided we got to break this up. And, you know, they did have some young guys, you know, the Don Maloney's and Murdoch and, you know, some of the Duguay, Greschner, who they were going to try to incorporate into the lineup and kind of go young, you know, go like the Rangers have done the last couple of years. But I thought, as I remember, and at that time I was 17, I thought they could have gone one more year with that team. You know, because that team, I think it was 71, 72, and 73. 3 years in a row, they knocked out the previous Stanley Cup winner. So that team was so close. I mean, much like the team, you know, we'll get to Henrik and the team in the 2010s, but much like that team, this team should have won at least one cup, and they just always ran into a team a couple of times. It was the Bruins or the Canadiens, or I think I mentioned on the last podcast, Chicago was very good, the Bobby Hull, Tony Esposito, Blackhawks, and they always ran into a team that was just on a roll or a little bit better than them. Obviously, 72 was the year they really could have won, and that's when John Rattell broke his ankle off of Dale Roth slap shot. I think it was the end of February. He came back for the finals, but he wasn't, you know, anywhere near fit to be playing. So that was probably the year they really could have won the Cup. But that team, that 1970 through 74, I mean, that team was so good. They were clearly one of the best teams in the league. They had four Hall of Famers on it, right? Rattell, Gilbert, Brad Park, and Jockeman. They were a very formidable team, but it was just a disappointment every year that they ran into somebody who was hot or just a little bit better than they were.
Who was the toughest for? Probably was it Boston or Montreal? Because those were two teams I know. You know, you did mention Philly. I think they won in 74, but Montreal and Boston won in between there too.
Well, Boston won in 70 and 72. Montreal won in 71 and 73. And
yeah, every other year, right? I remember that. Yep.
And Philly won in 74 and 75.
75, and then Montreal won again after that until the Islanders.
Right, and then Montreal went on their four straight cups before the Islander dynasty started. Right,
four
exactly.
Straight. Who was the toughest opponent at that time for you as a fan? Was it Montreal, Boston, or somebody else, or?
You know, I mean, Montreal was so good. They were, you know, they had Henri Richard. They had Ken Dryden in goal. They were such a good defensive team. You couldn't score against them. So probably them and the Bruins. The Bruins were a different kind of team, you know. I mean, they had Jerry Cheevers, who was a good goalie. You know, they were more of a – I mean, back then they were the big bad Bruins. You know, besides Espo and Bobby Orr and the talent they had on that team – you know, you had guys like Wayne Cashman and Hodge and Teddy Green, Derek Sanderson, Gary Doak, you know, guys that would just bang you around and annoy you and get you off your game. So, I mean, to me, probably in those years, probably the Bruins. You know, again, I was pretty young, so I'm not, you know, at a point I am now to really kind of, you know, have analyzed the teams. But and then, of course, you know, Philly came with the Broad Street Bullies, and we know how they won, you know. So, you know, the funny thing about those Bruins is the Rangers got so many of those Bruins after they won those two cups. We had Esko, obviously the disastrous Ken Hodge trade, which is probably the worst trade in Ranger history for Rick Middleton. Middleton scored like 400 goals, and I think Hodge played about 20 games for the Rangers. But that was Esko wanted him. Gary Doak came and played. Obviously, Derek Sanderson came and played. Don Ory came and played. And then you had other guys like Ted Green and Wayne Cashman who were coaches for the Rangers. So, you know, all those guys that I grew up, my first team, just couldn't stand these guys. And then I had to see them all come through and either coaching the Rangers or wearing a Ranger jersey. And it was kind of like my introduction to, oh, okay, sports is kind of a business, isn't it? You can't get too attached to some of these guys. They may not be here next day, you know? And then having to accept the guys that you just, I mean, just couldn't stand. And then you had to accept them and root for them as Rangers. That was tough. That was tough. I mean, you know, we still go through that today. But for a kid, for me, that was in my early teens, that was the first taste I had of that, and that was tough. You know, I mean, those were the teams that I, you know, and I still hold grudges against the Bruins, although not that much. Flyers, I from those years, one of the games, they showed that game six of 74, a lot of clips from that. And, I mean, I remember those games, like Battleship Kelly and Selesky and Bobby Clark. And, I mean, just. I was watching it last night, and my blood was boiling, and it's 40 years ago, you know, but more than that, 45 years ago. So I still hold a grudge against the Flyers from going back to 74 and 75. But, yeah, to answer your question, I still think the Bruins were probably the toughest ones to play against because they just battered you. I mean, they didn't just outscore you. They battered you. And, you know, the Rangers held their own against them, but the difference was we had Brad Park, who was great, and they had Bobby Orr. And to me, the teams were evenly matched except for that. And Bobby Orr, I think, was just the difference for those early 70s Bruins teams that other teams just didn't have, you know. You know, to answer your question, I think it was the Bruins. But, you know, all those teams were tough. Then the Canadians came in the late 70s. I mean, they I don't know how many Hall of Famers they had on that team, 8, 9. and then the Islanders came after that. And, you know,
right.
Before you know it, then Edmonton 1985, after that, yeah. and then Edmonton came after that. So, yeah, right. I mean, you had a stretch of like 15 years where I think Calgary snuck a cup in, but you had 15 years where basically three or four teams won the cup. And that was kind of the last of that era where you have that now. Now it seems like it's a different team every year.
Right.
I mean, anyway, getting back to Rod, I got one more story I can tell you about Rod. And it's really not about him, but it's about something I did. My in-laws lived out in western New York, out by Buffalo, a little south of Buffalo. And my wife and I would always go out there for Thanksgiving. And day after Thanksgiving one year, my wife and her sister and her mother, you know, went out to do the Friday after Thanksgiving shopping in Erie, Pennsylvania. And I decided that I wanted to get in my car and take a trip to Guelph because that's where Ratel and Gilbert played when they were young. So I decided I wanted to go up there, see what the town looked like, go to the rink and everything else. Well, you know, it was a good bit of a drive into Ontario. And, you know, I got there and I mean, there were still pictures up of teams that they were on and pictures of them. It was, you know, a little, you know, what you see, any kind of small town Canadian rink. And it was just a great experience to go up there and see some Ranger history that, you know, was really not connected to Rangers except that the two of them had played there. And then bottom line is I got stuck in a ridiculous snowstorm, and I don't know how I found my way back, but I did. But it was worth it to go up there and see where they played as kids. It was worth it, man.
So who's okay? Before we'll get on to Henrik Lundqvist, but your top three all time Rangers are who? Like your top number one, number two, number three. Your three stars, basically.
I mean, right off the top of my head, Rod and Leach. After that,
okay.
That's a tough one. After that, you know, might be Henrik. I mean, we'll talk about him shortly, but you know, I'm not old enough to have seen guys like Andy Bathgate and Harry Howell and those guys. You know, I mean, you got to throw Mess in there. He wasn't, you know, he was around. He was a Ranger for 10 years, even though he was in Edmonton all those years too. And just the fact of what he did, you know, I mean, Rangers. I don't think have the success that they had, obviously, unless he came here. So, you know, you really got to consider him too. I mean, if you consider him a Ranger, which I do, it'd probably be Leach, Gilbert, and Mess. But Henrik would probably be fourth.
Okay. Yeah, Roger Bear, man. Top Ranger, man. First got to get his jersey hanged at the Garden. And when you go to the Garden and you go there for different events, like me, as a kid, whether you're there for the circus or some sort of show, you see the banners on both sides for the basketball and the hockey clubs. And you see the names, and then you go back and you study, like, okay, this is what it's all about, man.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I thought you were done. Sorry.
No, I'm pretty done. He's going to say something, and then we'll go ahead and transition.
Yeah, no, I before we leave, Rod, I was just going to tell you and tell the fans that are listening, hopefully they'll be playing what I watched last night a little bit more on MSG. But it was like two or three solid hours, might have been four, of just old Ranger games against the Flyers, against Montreal, against the Bruins. They had one of the final games, I think it was game six, that the Bruins won the cup. Against the Bruins, not the whole game, but good stretches of it. You know, and then Troutwig would talk to different people that were on the team, Rod being one of them. People should check, and you should check if you didn't see it, MSG, to see if they might be showing some of those again, because it was fascinating, man. And especially, you know, maybe for you, somebody who wasn't around at that time, just to see, I mean, the things that stood out to me, obviously, other than the games, was no advertisements on the board or the ice. And there would have been, and in today's game, there would have been about 87 power plays. it was a different game back. It was a different game back then, man. I mean, people were just like hacking people, pulling people down and everything, and no call. Not like today, but it was, if you get a chance, to watch it or DVR it, just as a hockey fan and as a Ranger fan, I was glued to the TV. It was fascinating, not just seeing the Rangers, the old Rangers that I remember, but you know, a lot of the guys like Bobby Orr and Phil Esposito and Bobby Hull, playing as Stan Mikita as well. So it's just it was great. It was great. So I would advise anybody to check it out, see if it's going to be played again in the next couple of weeks, and either DVR to watch it, because it was great for a hockey fan, especially in August.
All right, cool. I'm going to be on the lookout for it. I love sports documentaries, whether it's my teams or teams I don't even require, you know, sit back, you sit back and learn, man. Just history in general, not even sports related. It could be anything.
Yeah, me too. Stuff. Me too.
And you brought up, you know, going into Henry Lundqvist as far as his retirement. I mean, we talked about this over the years since the, him going to the Capitals and he, pulling away from that. I mean, Henry Lundqvist, they made the announcement, right, as far as they're going to raise his jersey. Of course, why not? No surprise there. I mean, just he's probably, like, grace-wise, most class athlete, he's probably number one, honestly. As great as he was on the ice, as far as, in the net, but the fact that even there were times, and you already know this, Glenn, like, the criticisms from the newspapers or even some fans, even through his greatness, that he always took the high road. And just a great human on that aspect, but nonetheless, the smile, he's kind of he's a handsome dude, as far as everybody likes him and appreciates him, and he was always a big gamer, man. Was big in the playoffs, and especially those defensive-minded Ranger teams at the time in the late 2000s, early 2010s, that decade, and then of course the Stanley Cup Finals. Your thoughts as far as the closing of Henry Lundqvist, and then also, his number needed to be on that wing of the Garden, next to all the other Ranger greats.
Yep. Well, Steve, my first favorite Ranger was Eddie Jacobin. I always toward the goaltenders, and I was a goalie also when I played, and probably part of the reason why was because Eddie was my first favorite Ranger. I had an Eddie Jacobin jersey, I had a JD jersey, I have a Richter jersey, but I think Henrik was the best of all of them. You want to make a case for Richter because they won a cup? Okay, but when you look at the overall body of work, the wins, the minutes, the goals against, the save percentage. I don't think there's any question that Henrik was the best goalie in Ranger history. Those Rangers I started to say before in the 2010s were so similar to the early 1970 Rangers. They had great talent. They were one of the better teams in the league. And they always ran into somebody that was just a little bit better. I read yesterday that the 2010 Rangers, that stretch that they had, Henrik was 7-2 in game sevens and 15-4 in elimination games. It's almost impossible that team didn't win a cup. I mean, talk about his goals against, I believe, was 1.1 in those 9 game sevens. 1.1. I mean, how much better could you be? I think it was 3 shutouts, too. And we saw those games that in 2014 against Montreal when Dominic Moore scored the one goal after Henrik made that helicopter save on Thomas Vanek.
Yeah.
Those 3-1 down comebacks against Washington and Pittsburgh.
Right.
All those overtime games. I mean, that one where McDonough scored, but I think under a minute left, and then Stepan scored in overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, those are nerve-wracking times. I mean, I remember going through those. I was like crying. I'm like on the edge of my seat. I'm like, I can't take this, I can't take it anymore. And I don't know how he just had the nerves of steel to come up with big game after big game when it counted. Now, did they win them all? No, they didn't. But you can't blame that on him. Even, I've never seen a goalie. Everybody loved Eddie Jocelyn. Everybody loved J.D. Everybody loved Richter. I never saw fans be so divided on him. I could never believe how there were so many Ranger fans that just would criticize him to no end. In fact, I've even got a friend of mine who, when I had season tickets, used to sit next to me, and all he would do was criticize him. That's all he would do. And so when he sent me a link to the article that Lundqvist had retired, and I replied back to him, well, you're not going to have Henrik Lundqvist to kick around anymore. What are you going to do? but it just surprises me so much, and I'm sure you've probably seen it too. The divide, I mean, it was still probably, 70-30 in favor of him. But I could never understand that those teams, they weren't stocked with a bunch of all-stars, those teams, when you look at them. To think that team had the success that they had, I mean, for a period, they were right up there with Chicago, who won three cups, and I forget if it was Pittsburgh who won a couple. They were right up there with the teams that had won the most playoff series in, a certain stretch of years and didn't win the cup. And that team wasn't stacked like the early 70s team were. I mean, they had Rick Nash, but you're talking about guys like, Zouk, who we all love, and, some of the Stepan and, Marty St. Louis at the end. And then before that, guys like Callahan and Dubinsky. And, those teams weren't stacked. And for them to go as far as they did, to me, it comes down to the guy in the gold crease. That team, to me, would not have nearly the success if it wasn't for him. And sure, it's a disappointment that he didn't win the cup. We all wanted to. We wanted it for us. We wanted it for him. It would have been great. That 2014 finals, I mean, every game was a one-goal game. And they were in overtime. And you had you had the one game that they lost in overtime where Rick Nash missed a wide-open net for whatever reason, he just blew it. It was a wide-open net, hitting posts, bad calls. Those games were razor thin. And the Rangers could have won that series in five just as well, to me, as L.A. did. Obviously, they didn't. But you can't blame him for hitting posts and missing empty nets and stuff like that.
No, he's kept them in a lot of games.
Jonathan Quick on that one from Nash, he was like in the corner. I mean, how did he miss that? I love Hank. He's always been class. He's been so active in charities in the city. He's another one that I saw at a lot of the ice hockey in Harlem events, signing autographs and taking pictures and all that. Mm-hmm. And, when you put it all together, again, it's like Rod, on the ice, off the ice, what more could you ask for? And, I'm sorry that it happened this way. Obviously, you're concerned about his health. I mean, it sounds like he's okay, just not enough to be able to play hockey. So I'm sorry it happened this way, but I'm really happy that he never played another game in a different uniform. That would have been tough to see.
Right.
He's one of the guys, like Gilbert, who deserved to have his jersey go up in the rafters as a Ranger from the beginning to the end. And I think that's, just a great ending and the way it should be. And I can't wait to watch the game when he gets his number retired, if I'm not lucky enough to be there. I can't wait to watch it. I'm sure it's going to give me goosebumps. So that's how I feel about Hank. I'm sorry?
I'm with you as far as I think a lot of it is trolling, social media driven in this particular era where there's fans, they just take the cheap shots because they know they can say it and it can never be checked. But, Henrik Lundqvist, he literally put those Rangers teams on his back by just keeping them in games because, like you said, they weren't like offensively stacked. They had a game here and there where you guys could have a breakout. But when it came to, like, very later in the series, they didn't score a lot of goals. And Hamrick, in big pressure moments, kept them alive. And I think a lot of Ranger fans, a lot of hockey fans, can appreciate his valiant efforts and then just handle it with class, even in tough losses. Yeah, I remember those series, like you said, versus the Capitals and being down and coming back, and he had a lot to do with that, man. And especially those series versus the Capitals, and like you said, in the Stanley Cup Finals versus the Kings. I even taken another step in the Eastern Conference Finals in 15 versus the Lightning, when the Rangers could score every game, they could score at will on the road, they could have scored at home in Games 5 and Game 7.
Yeah. I mean, that was a shocker, too. That was a shocker, too, the next year, losing to Tampa. It was like, I mean, I think they scored like 7 goals down there in Game 6, and they got shut out here at the Garden in Game 5 and Game 7. Like, how does that happen? Oh, it was. Right. I mean, that was so disappointing, because that team was, you know, they were coming toward the end of it, but they were still in that window where they would have been good enough to maybe win the cup. And you know, if I remember correctly, was it Pittsburgh who won the cup in 16? I think so. But no, I guess not, because that was the conference finals. I'm trying to think. No, I'm sorry, that was 15. That was Chicago. Chicago won in 15, I think. Yeah, I mean, that was really – that and that Ottawa series those were like two of the most disappointing series in my Ranger life that I can remember, because, you know, there were a lot of times when you knew going in that they probably weren't going to win, you know, but you hoped for the best. That Ottawa series and that Tampa series, I went into those very confident that they were going to win. And, you know, the only problem with those teams, if you remember, is they had chances, especially in 2014, they had chances to knock teams out early, and they couldn't do it. You know, they had chances to end series in 5 games, and then they'd go to 7. Or 6 games, and you know, and they couldn't, you know, lessen their burden. They couldn't end series quickly, and I think in some of those years, and particularly in 2014, it caught up to them at the end. You know, but that team, to me too, should have, the way Hank was playing in those years, they should have been able to steal a cup. Didn't happen, so. We'll see if this new iteration of the Rangers can do it, right?
We'll see. We'll see what they have to do in 21-22. Let's finish up on this note. I wondered, you brought up the team that actually had a very great great decade in the Blackhawks. You know, they won what, 13, I think, and I believe 13-15, 2010 versus Philly, I believe. Yeah, they beat Philadelphia.
Right. Yep.
In that series. But this crop of, you know, they're still of a shell of themselves, but a lot of people believe they have enough to, you know, try to make a little bit of a last-ditch run. Now, I don't know about Jonathan Toews. He's been hurt a lot, right? How do you see the Chicago Blackhawks?
You know, I mean, I thought the Blackhawks played pretty well last year. I watched quite a number of their games. They were in it, and they kind of faltered at the end, but they were, and it was goaltending. I mean, Lankinen came up and was tremendous at the start, and then he kind of came back to earth. Obviously, missing Toews is a problem. When I look at that team, though, I mean, you know, they've got some young guys that are pretty talented. I mean, Alex DeBrincat, I think, is a fantastic player, 30-goal scorer. Obviously, Patrick Kane is a Hall of Famer. If Toews can come back, that's going to give them a big lift, not as much in production or just having someone on the ice. I thought the signing of Tyler Johnson was really good for them. You know, earlier in his career, you know, he was a 60-70 point scorer. Now, yeah, he was playing with Palat and Kucherov. I understand that. But, you know, they've got some talent, Chicago, too, that they can put out there. Dominic Kubalik, who was a rookie or a couple of years ago, had a great rookie year. He came back a little bit last year, but I think he's another guy that can score 30 goals consistently and is very good on the power play. You know, I think that team – oh, and how could I forget? Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, I was shocked
Vegas.
That Vegas decided to go with Leonard and not Fleury. I know Leonard is younger, and he is a good goalie. I understand that, but I'm not sure that I would have done that. And then obviously he went to Chicago, wasn't sure if he wanted to play or not, was thinking about retiring. So I was really happy to see that he decided to, you know, to play again this year. And, you know, when you get to that age, you can fall off a cliff at any time. But he hasn't really shown any signs of slowing down at all. He played really well when Leonard was out this year, and he had to play a bunch of games in a row. I saw – you gave me time since you said we were going to look at the Blackhawks to check out their roster. They've still got Lankinen. He's not that young, but he played decently. And Malcolm Subban, who was the backup in Vegas, who's, you know, not a bad goalie. He could be a decent backup. So, I mean, I think what it's going to come down to for Chicago is how good they can be defensively. That kind of was their downfall in the second half of this year. Earlier, it looked
you
like
know,
they
as far
making...
as breaking up the
sorry,
band. Guys. You know, the guys who've been there for the Stanley Cup run under Quenneville with Taze and Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith, who's now no longer there, replaced, you know, you got,
right.
You know, Seth Jones is on the roster. Who's a very good defenseman.
Seth Jones,
what about the
too,
chemistry
right?
there, you know, to the defense as far as, like, this is probably where if things go, you know, don't go well for the Blackhawks or you have some tradable pieces, you know, to find, you know, with the contracts that teams are willing to get on. What about,
yeah.
you know, Dylan Strome, guy who has excellent potential. Kubalik,
yep.
like you already mentioned. Kirby
Doc, they're very high on.
Kirby
he was
Doc,
out
yeah.
all year until the last week or 10 days with a wrist injury, but they are super high on him. I forgot about Seth Jones too. I mean, you look at that division. I don't know how good Dallas is going to be again. St. Louis,
oh,
I think, is on the down. I'm not saying they're not a good team, and they may not, you know, they won't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. you know, I don't know how good they're going to be. I don't know if they're going to be a dominant type of team. You know, Nashville made a nice play at the end of the season to sneak in. You know, I mean that division is not super tough. So if they can work out their defensive problems that they had last year and get some good goaltending with Fleury and Taves comes back, you know, I think they can make a run for the playoffs. Now, you know, I mean, I don't expect them to be in the Stanley Cup Finals, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, they've had a few off years. And, you know, some of the problem, if you remember with that Chicago team, Steve, the years that they won the Cup, other than Patrick Kane and Taves, if you remember, they were the first team to have two $10 million players on the team. And mm-hmm. I think I mentioned that even a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the Rangers, when you're talking about, you know, we were talking about Jack Eichel and Zibanejad and Panarin. It's like, how many guys can you have make double digits in millions and still be able to put together a good team? They were the first team that had two guys making $10 million a year. And what they had to do, I mean, they broke up that team, not really broke up, but they moved guys like, you know, Brandon Saad and, you know, some guys, you know, back and forth, Panarin. They moved guys, and then they brought other guys in to fill those roles, and they still won those other couple of cups.
Right.
You know, but if you look at the rosters of the three teams that won the cup, they're more different than you would expect for a team winning three cups in 5 years or 6 years, whatever it was. So they had some great management that was able to move the pieces around and still win with Taves and Kane making that type of money. You know, even look at the goalies. They had different goalies win the cup in that stretch too. So, you know, I mean, eventually that's going to – it's not sustainable. You know, you have to – you're going to have to take your lumps, and they've done that for the last two, three, 4 years. But I think they're on their way back up again. So I think they're going to be a fun team to watch. They were last year until the end. Then they got to be a little bit of a drag, honestly. The United Center is fantastic. I love the guy who sings the national anthem there. And the Blackhawks red jerseys. I'm a Ranger fan, but to me, the Blackhawks red jerseys are the best jerseys in the league. So they'll always be fun to watch.
All right. It's been a fun episode. We didn't get to the captain stuff, but I know the Rangers, social media has been harping about who should be captain and all that, but I don't know. You know, Gallant and Drew are going to force their hand and make it happen. Well, maybe we'll discuss it, and they'll still have time. You know, they haven't had it since when McDonough was there.
Yeah.
Final thoughts from you, Glenn.
I think they did say they want to name a captain this year, so we'll see. But we can talk about it next episode.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that next time. It was a heavy, heavy episode on greats, Ranger greats, and Gilbert and Lundqvist. And your final thoughts, Glenn? Man, I enjoyed the some of those, you know, the little intricates. I was not around for. I sat back and listened because even though I studied it, but you. Remember it exactly as a fan, and this is what sports is all about, to really pick up a lot of the games you mentioned, like the one in, you know, the last game of the season with Detroit.
Yep.
And then, you know, tuning in, watching Montreal and Chicago, I thought that was very, very good. Man, I loved hearing your final thoughts, sir. It was an honor to hear you on this, man.
Hey, well, you know, Steve, you're right. I mean, this was a real fun episode. I mean, during the season, we're getting caught up on, you know, what the Rangers are doing, wins and losses, and who's playing on what line and what the coach is doing and everything. So, you know, it was kind of nice on a bittersweet week for Ranger fans between Henrik retiring and Roger Gilbert passing away. It was a lot of fun for me to be able to go back and, kind of reminisce about, my beginnings in hockey and games that I remembered when I was, 10, 12, 14 years old. I love, like you, I love history. I love hockey history. And this was a great episode, and I'm so happy I was able to be a part of it. Thank you.
That's good. Yeah, thank you, Glenn. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks, and we'll maybe adjust this captaincy, and then maybe talk another team. Let me know which one you want. We could just go ahead and freestyle. It could be Calgary. It could be anybody, really. You know, sometimes it's good to talk around the league and get our perspectives as far as from the outside looking in. Yeah, man. Shout out to Glenn, man. Rank podcast with Ranger Proud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Yeah, man. It puzzles me, man. The class act of these Ranger teams, Glenn. Is like, how did either or roster at those particular times, the 70s or even the 2010 Rangers team, how did they not just get one out of it?
When
you think about it.
Each of those teams were good enough to win a cup. Just didn't happen, you know. But I thought they would. But both times I thought they would. I thought it was coming. So let's just hope that we're about halfway to 54 years. Let's hope we're not having to wait another 27 years.
let's hope not. Oh, no.
No, that was rough. That was rough. But, it's been a blast talking to you about some of those old games and those old teams and everything. And, I'm glad we have a chance to do that while we're not talking about, you know, the current Rangers, and there's not a lot going on there, and the Jack Eichel rumors seem to have settled down, thankfully. And so it was, right? I haven't heard anything about that for a while. In fact, even Drury said, I don't know what everybody's talking about. I never talked to the Sabres seriously about Jack Eichel. So I don't know. But we'll definitely have time. The season's coming up soon. Hey, I mean, training camp's going to be, what, in about 5 weeks, 6 weeks? And we'll have plenty to talk about then. So it was nice to have a chance to kind of take a different direction tonight and go back and talk about some of the old Rangers and some of the old other teams and games and everything that we remember. It was great to reminisce with you, Steve. A lot of fun tonight. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, man. All right, so I'm going to ask you, ladies and gentlemen. Lead blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep blue, 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 bleep blue.